desire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again.
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm.
And he got it. Young Ball continues to wear him out.
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers played three quarters of great basketball in the city of LA. Unfortunately, it came over two games. They lost in ugly fashion to both the Lakers and Clippers that seemed to try just a little bit too hard, despite both teams missing their number two star. To help break down what's going on in the West, as well as his grievances with the NBA this season, is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Not too bad, man. Not too bad. Second podcast back. I feel like we're back in the rhythm of things. It's just like riding a bike. I think that we were kind of talking about what we wanted to do with this episode. And, you know, the Cavs did just finish playing three of the top, I would say three teams in the West. Since neither of us are big believers in the screen assist all-stars out there in Utah.
Yeah, I was going to say outside of screen assist Twitter, I think you could say that the Cavs played the kind of consensus top three teams in the West. Yes, Utah is riding a big win streak, but they're kind of getting fat off some bad teams. Sorry to hijack this, but two things. So we're going to discuss a little later. You tweeted it out. I'm excited to talk about it, just kind of why you haven't enjoyed this NBA season as much as other years. I have a lot of thoughts on that, so I'm really glad that you brought that up. But because we did play the top three teams in the mild, mild West, I want to ask how, of those three teams, let's start on the positive end of the scale. Of those three teams, which team has impacted how you felt about them in the preseason the most in a positive way?
I think the Clippers, actually, and it's in a weird way because I feel like everyone else is down on the Clippers because it's almost like the crime that comes with paying too close of attention. Mm-hmm. I think there's something to be said for the fact that they are Cavs westing it this season. I don't think they care that much. I think that there are tensions on that team that probably come with the weird transition from being a try hard team to a save it for the playoffs and flip the switch team.
Yeah.
But I think that what has impressed me with that team if I had a concern for that team going into the year, it was that they didn't have a lot of offensive ball movers. Like a lot of guys that are either ISO guys, like Kawhi, off ball players like Paul George. That's where mm-hmm. he does most of his damage. And really only one traditional lead initiator of an offense in Lou Williams, because Pat Beverly is more of an off-ball player too. So yeah. You kind of thought, you know, this is a team that makes sense. But what my concern was that when push comes to shove, they were just going to go back to Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell pick and rolls because Lou is their best play starter.
And it's what they're used to as well, right?
And
you fall back into muscle memory to some extent.
But every time I've watched them, I've been pretty impressed by how egalitarian things are with them. They just kind of have a lot of smart players, even if none of them are your traditional play starters. And Kawhi's playmaking has really gotten a lot better, even from last year, in my opinion, to the point where it just kind of feels equal opportunity. I'm interested to see over a playoff series against a team like the Lakers, who I think have the best defensive personnel in the league. Even better than the Clippers, depending on the day. Let me rephrase. I think the Lakers have the best regular season defensive personnel in the league.
Okay.
But I'm interested to see if all that length the Lakers throw at them starts to bog things down in the postseason. But in the meantime, that's what's impressed me the most, is the fact that offensively they make a lot more sense than I thought they might.
So I'm not going to go too far into that because I want to circle back to them when we talk about who has kind of fallen off, in our opinion, the most from the beginning of the season, because I'm on the other side of the spectrum with the Clippers.
I'm not worried about them.
I have worries. I have concerns. I'm going to go against my brand, though, and say that the Lakers are the team that's kind of that I've really bought into.
They're just a joy to watch, man.
I enjoy so many players on that team, and part of what helps me enjoy them, I think, and this is going back to my troll nature, is the fact that it is pretty clear that Clutch has kind of taken over this team, and this is a LeBron team, and the Lakers kind of have to eat some humble pie. And there's a good portion of Lakers Twitter that just absolutely hates that aspect of the experience. But you know what? All things considered, I still don't hate Dwight Howard. I hate every other member of the 09 Magic, because Dwight Howard, at least I can point to that guy and be like, all right, so, you know, maybe the whole biogenesis thing helped him stay fresh a little bit longer, but it wasn't like the other guys that basically were the Captain America syndrome, where these scrubs turned into all-stars like Mikhail Petras, Turgaloo, Jameer Nelson, Courtney Lee, all these guys. They drive me nuts. But I like a lot of the guys on the team. I like how they play. And what I like about them as well, and part of what I don't like about the Clippers, is they're really trying to figure some things out in the regular season. They're trying to figure out their chemistry. They're trying to figure out what pieces work with who. They're really workshopping a lot of stuff. And LeBron teams do have a flip the switch type thing going on all the time. But I think he also understands the importance of working these new pieces in, so that when you go to the deadline and when you go to buyout season, you can already kind of figure out, all right, this guy doesn't really work as well with us once we start trying, which is something that I just don't think the Clippers are doing. I don't think they're workshopping anything. It's just, hey, even though Kawhi Leonard is the only player on this team that has ever flipped a switch in his life, and we aren't really working out how to play with one another, we are going to turn things on in the playoffs. And that's something that concerns me.
You know what I like about this Lakers team more than anything right now is they took NBA Twitter and even my own sentiment and said, fuck you. We're going to play the way we want to play. You know, I mean, how much of the offseason and even the first couple games of this season did we spend screaming about how AD needs to play the center and,
oh, yeah, and LeBron at power forward,
Dwight, yep, off the floor. And they said, no, we think we can make this work. And not only do they make it work, I think that's actually the best version of their team, at least in the regular season, because it is just a nightmare to play against them with LeBron at the three, Avery Bradley at the one, which is just Avery Bradley and Danny Green at the one and two. is just so insanely unfair, and they're such pests, and they are able to play so aggressively. I mean, how often do you see teams that have that level of perimeter defensive on-ball talent that are enabled to play as aggressively as those guys can play?
No, because they're a really, really nice fit, especially because Avery Bradley is playing a little bit better this year. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has been playing better as well.
You don't have to go under any screens,
right,
ever. You can fight through them or go over them every time. And the length that Bradley has as a one, which I remember, if you'll recall, in the offseason, I talked about that, how I kind of speculated that part of the reason he wasn't as impactful as he was in Boston is that he started guarding twos a lot more often in Detroit. And his best value is being that long-armed, quick defender with that kind of hounds point guards. And I think that even though he hasn't been perfect this year, I do think he fits there. And then Danny Green is just a menace. And when you get through those guys and just enter the thicket of arms that is LeBron, AD, and JaVale or Dwight, it's just unfair. And I really, really like how that team makes sense. But none of it works if LeBron isn't playing perhaps not the best offense of his career, but the most grand mastery offense of his career.
Yeah, this is the version of LeBron that I think ages the best. Like,
yeah, what the fuck does he, if he loses another 15% of athleticism, he can still do most of this.
Yeah, he's still possibly the best passer ever. What you said about Avery Bradley.
I still think he's the best player in the league, by the way.
You know, that's a reasonable take. What you said about Avery Bradley defensively actually has me thinking about one of our large adult sons, Colin Sexton, and just getting him to defend point guards more.
I agree with that general take.
And I've really liked how Sexton has played lately. There's certainly been hiccups and frustrations, but overall, he's really stepped up with Clarkson out. But no, I agree. I agree with your Lakers take. I agree with your LeBron take. I just have the most confidence in them. They're providing a little bit more proof of concept early in the season here.
I picked them to make the finals.
I did as well.
Pretty early into the season, and
I think they're going to trade Kuzma. I think they're actually going to get something that matters. I think there's name recognition with Kuzma that outweighs how good he is as a player, but I think that's something that's going to matter to some dumb team out there.
I would argue that it's not as important that they trade him as people think. I know he kind of stinks on occasion, but like guys like that do.
Well, I'm not saying it's necessary. I'm saying it could get them to another tier, especially
if you can upgrade on Kuzma, then that's great. But
like, I think Brian Windhorst talked about moving Covington for him, kind of thing.
Concerns about his fit, I think, are a little overblown because if there's one thing that keeping AD at the four in the regular season allows you to do is like knowing that you always have that trump card of putting him at the five in some matchups. And that's where you do need a Kuzma-esque player if you don't have other big wings to make LeBron not have to guard guys he doesn't want to guard, which is always going to be a factor on any team. So I don't know. I just really like them. They're so smart. And like, I just love any team that doesn't try to tell LeBron that he should be something other than he is.
See, that again, that gets back to what I enjoy is that they've kind of had to eat crow. They said, hey, shout out to Todd barking in the background. He agrees. He's backing up my takes and my opinions.
I think he thinks someone's at the front door. He's really on this run lately where Jesus Christ. He's on this run lately where he is like he'll hear the neighbors close their car door.
Oh,
across the street and loses his fucking mind. It's like, bro, if this is the bar, we're going to be in for a long couple years here.
Yeah.
Until you get old and mellow out. Luckily, the baby doesn't care at all.
You got to get those dog CBD treats or whatever. Shocking my solution involves weed, but
you know. Always. But yeah.
Speaking of weed, do you have any takes about the Denver Nuggets, or are we just going to lump them into the Utah Jazz category?
They're somewhere in between, but like, I don't know. Doesn't it just feel like they
doesn't
needed
do Brad- much for me, man? Well,
it feels like they needed Bradley Beal to get on the market.
Yeah. Yeah,
I just feel like they're a Bradley Beal level player away from me taking them seriously.
Yeah, they're a Bradley Beal and a Slim Fast sponsorship away from really getting to that next level. It is weird that Gary Harris has just kind of fallen off a cliff offensively.
Harris's numbers are bad. Murray won't shoot threes anymore. Mamba mentality.
I would absolutely do a Gary Harris love buy low, but I don't think that's in the cards. But
no, probably not. I think I feel very justified in being annoyed by all the Jeremy Grant love early in the season, where I was like, "What are we pretending this guy is like a friend? Like people are pretending he's like at least a Robert Covington level player." And I'm like, I don't think he is. I think he's just a guy.
I like him.
He's fine, but why did we pretend like he mattered, like, in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah,
like,
it's...
I'm telling you, like, people who don't, like, care about guys like that were like, oh, Jeremy Grant, that guy's going to get it.
You know what it is? The Denver Nuggets had a very nice knife that they are ready to go into the playoffs with, and Jeremy Grant was the knife sharpener. It got their knife just a little bit sharper, sharper. They're a little bit better than they were yesterday. But there's two teams with the bazooka, and I just don't think that it matters that their knife's a little bit sharper.
I was wondering where you're. This was a clumsy analogy, but I think it actually landed in a pretty strong place. So
the important thing is that you stick the landing, Carter.
That's on me for doubting you midway through, because I was like, I don't know if he's going to get this to a workable spot.
I don't think is going to stick the landing? The Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. Tell me why you don't like them.
So, other than what I said earlier, which is, I don't know why they're acting like a year three title team. They remind me of last year's Warriors in how they're approaching things. I do take Harrell and Doc, their criticisms of the locker room and the environment seriously. Like, I think Toronto deserves some credit for how well they played without Kawhi Leonard. But some of that was they had a built-in system basically, and all they did was replace their most disruptive player with Kawhi Leonard, which worked very, very well. The thing is, I know Kawhi can flip the switch, but I'm not convinced that that's going to translate to the rest of the team. Because when you look at those old Cavs teams, okay, it's a lot of specialists and guys that play well off of LeBron. So when LeBron goes to 110%, he's going to make the entire system look better. I don't know what Kawhi playing better on defense and hitting 15-foot jump shots is going to do to make the rest of the team play at a higher level when they need it in the playoffs. Paul George has had questions in the playoffs in the past. And these guys, they're not doing anything to establish a proof of concept to figure out which players work and don't work come playoff time. And you head into the playoffs or you head into this trade deadline not really knowing what adjustments to make, because we don't know what to make of this team yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are fair concerns. I just think ultimately the talent level wins out with this team. I think the Lakers are more than the sum of their parts. I do not think of that about the Clippers. I just think, which is why, by the way, you know, it's not like I'm a Clippers apologist. I picked the Lakers to beat them and go to the finals.
Clipper Rodriguez.
But Jesus Christ. but I just think ultimately, I don't think, I guess, depending on what our definition of a successful season is for the Clippers. Do you think any other team in the West is going to beat the Clippers in the playoffs other than the Lakers? Because I think the answer is absolutely not.
I don't think so, but the other qualifier is I'm really concerned about their health. Like, I'm concerned about
Kawhi. Yeah, I mean, health stuff always has to be accounted for, and like, I think that's just goes without saying. I think that they make too much sense at too many different spots. I mean, the only changes I make to this roster are really just sub out Zubac for someone better.
Yeah, but I mean, even him, like, he does play well, and I don't know.
I don't give a shit. He's not a playoff player.
Maybe.
And you know he's not. You know he's not. It's just those guys are never playoff players.
Playoff player. If you're playing against the Lakers and they're playing this style that they currently are with JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, like,
I don't want Zubac playing drop coverage in the playoffs.
Yeah. No,
I think guys like that are, I mean, this is the root of like my Zizic take, who, and obviously Zubac is a better player than Zizic by just about every metric, but like, there will always be room in the NBA regular season for a tall Euro with soft hands that has some touch around the basket. Because
just had to include the Euro part. Look at you, Carter myopic Rodriguez.
All I'm saying is those guys have an archetype. They always get 8 to 10 points off, you know, deep seals when the guy doesn't want to stop him from doing it. And then they get to the postseason and everything's too fast and they can't finish anymore.
Mm. No, I think there's validity to that. Yeah,
if I'm them, I'm looking not at this player because he's been pretty bad, but like a Willie Cauley-Stein-esque guy. They need their own JaVale or someone along those lines.
Shame they didn't pick up Marquise Chris when he was available.
Yeah, no kidding. Like if they could get a tall you know, lengthy, athletic, bouncy, vertical threat for those 13 minutes a game that Harrell isn't playing. I just think when you look at the Lakers right now, they can play a lot more different styles defensively.
Yeah.
The style that the Clippers can play is base defense with a little switchiness with Harrell. But mm-hmm. I just think I'm interested to see in the postseason if they don't make changes, because I do think Harrell is a solid switch defender. I don't think he's an elite switch defender. And, you know, it kind of makes me think of, on the other end, the way the Cavs attacked Steph Curry in the finals. Steph Curry is not a bad individual defender, but at the highest level of basketball, if he's your weakest link, you're going to attack him.
Right.
And I wonder that about a Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell pairing on defense. And I think those two are kind of important in crunch. I mean, those two are going to be in their crunch time lineups. So I just see a little, I want the Clippers to build themselves an out in case that specific style isn't working. I mean, if they had a rim protecting five, like let's say a Dwayne Dedman, who's mm-hmm. tall, moderately mobile and can block shots. I just think that makes a lot more sense with the rest of their defensive personnel than yeah. Montrezl Harrell.
Because you trade for John Henson, you cowards.
Well, there you go. Like, I don't want, if I'm the Clippers, I'm not interested in switching Kawhi off anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hedge and recover. So Harrell doesn't really make as much sense in that paradigm for them. So I just want them to have the option. I still think you're going to close with Harrell no matter what, but at least give me the option to play a different style defensively.
No, I think you raise valid points. My big thing is it would not surprise me to see Kawhi Leonard once again go into the playoffs, move mountains, and them win a title. I just want to see them put together a solid stretch of basketball before the end of the season. Otherwise, I'm going to go into the playoffs having a little bit of doubt in my mind that they're going to be able to win four playoff series. That's it.
But I will die on the hill that barring them landing on the Lakers side of the bracket, you're going to pick them in every series.
Probably just because I'm a coward and I don't make a lot of bold takes, but the problem right now is they just look like an untucked button down. And have you ever seen an untucked button down, Carter? They look bad.
Yeah, they are sloppy.
Sloppy, sloppy, sloppy. They are not polished. And why? Because they're not meant to be worn that way. Thankfully, there's Untuckin', the original button-down shirt that's actually designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or your shape, Untuckin' shirts always fall at the perfect untucked length. Choose from styles like wrinkle-free button-downs, super soft flannels, outerwear, and more. With Untuckin', your shirts never look baggy, bulgy, too long, or too big again. And their website is so easy to use, they even have a whole page devoted to helping you find your fit. So whether you're shopping for the perfect gift or just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untuckit is the way to go. Visit untuckit.com and use code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's untuckit.com and promo code BLUE for 20% off. How about that, Carter?
Justin, I've said it before, but I would just love it if they took the word bulgy out of the copy. I don't like it. It every time you say it, it trips me up. I start thinking about how it's a word I never use.
Check out my bulge, Carter.
I'm fine with it in the noun form, just not the adjective form.
This bulgy man was walking down the street, yeah, coming right at me.
No one would ever say that. I just think it's a... I just want to get with the good people at Untuckit and Ad Results Media and say, guys, it doesn't have to be this way.
You know what? That's a valid point. And another thing that you've mentioned to me that's making you a little bit uncomfortable is this NBA season. Can you elaborate why, Carter?
Yeah, I think I wanted to devote the second half of this pod to discussing why. And I think you kind of agree with me. I don't want to speak for you. I'll give you a chance.
I got takes, man.
I don't like the NBA as much as I should right now. And I think it has functionally nothing to do with the on-court product. And that's, I think, a little distressing. Ramona Shelburne posted a big tell-all sourced tell-all with Access talking about Paul George's decision to join the Clippers, which, by the way, he forced a trade, which none of the headlines seem to respect that reality, but it's fine. And I just thought to myself, like, I'm just over reading NBA reporter who shall not be named hopped in my DMs when I bitched about this and just said, like, how many more times do I have to sign up for 3,000 words of Paul George lying to me?
Shout out Anthony Irwin.
Not him. Instantly,
I'm kidding. He definitely would have done it publicly. We know.
I was wondering if you're. Anyway, it was, you know, and it's just like, it's just not in a good place where I think the media coverage of the game, like, we've bitched about this a lot. It's very TMZified. It's all trade requests and enforcing guys to markets. But then the reporting itself is actually in a really bad spot, I think, because it's all Access journalism and agents are just running the process.
Yeah.
And when agents are running the process, it's when you get pieces like this where players are functionally allowed to lie unchecked. and
it's a press release.
It is a press release. It's press release journalism. And I'm not sure what the answer is, because what is Ramona Shelburne going to turn down Access, you know, an hour, 2 hours with Paul George when you can't get more than 15 minutes without an agent's approval? I don't know if that's the answer. But it's just really ugly right now. It feels like, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels like it used to be Woj's pieces were all agent favors, en route to breaking news, right?
Yeah.
So and we all accepted this as an NBA fan community, and it was okay. Like, yeah. No one likes it, but yeah,
we know how those hot dogs are made.
Yeah. Yeah. But what I'm not quite sure what I'm getting from these features, because. In exchange for reading puff pieces from Woj, I at least get breaking news.
Yeah, it's
what I'm
it's
getting
tricky.
From. What am I getting from this Ramona Shelburne piece that's substance and value to me?
The thing is, I think there's almost too much transparency right now in the NBA. Twitter has been a blessing and a curse for that. You really do get to kind of get a glimpse inside the mind of players and. I think maybe we're just a little more jaded to these kind of pieces.
That was a thought I had, was like, do we just know too much? Would I have just read this at face value 10 years ago and said, oh, that's really interesting. He wanted to live close to his mom.
Well, the other thing too is the contracts are so much shorter. We've seen a version of this from Paul George multiple times as he's been in LA, as he's been in OKC, as he was in Indiana. Like, you can only go to this well so many times before people start rolling their eyes. And it's just, we have trouble buying into kind of those childhood notions where, hey, this guy's playing for my city. This is all he cares about. He's doing this for the love of the game and all that. You have a player like Anthony Davis coming out saying, oh, I don't play for any team. I'm the CEO of my own corporation. Like, okay. That's not really going to translate to the fans. That's not something
that's endearing. But Justin, I mean, we have to have our cake and eat it too here. We don't want to be lied to. And at least that's honest.
I kind of do.
I don't, because Paul George is lying to me. Paul George is pretending like this was just some random happening over the course of a couple of days and not some shit he probably talked about 2 years ago. That's what I'm so sick of.
I mean,
Paul George is controlling the narrative. In a way
he is. But there's a difference between lying when we have, in the last 12 months, contradictory statements. Like, we've had the exact polar opposite from him, and we know he's lying. I think that's different than kind of the noble lies of, hey, I'm here to play for your team, and all the kind of fluffy puffy stuff that helps with a noble lie.
I don't think these are noble lies.
No, the Paul George example absolutely is not. Nobody's buying that. Not even Clippers fans buy that. They all know that his contract is up in 2 years and they're going to have some tough questions at that time. Like, it's I get what you're saying. It is frustrating because when you're doing this kind of favor journalism, you're really not getting to the truth. And I don't think it does anything for anybody. Like, I think at this point we all know enough information where I don't even think Clippers fans enjoy that or get anything out of that, because they log on to Twitter and every single person they follow is calling it out, and they get into their little arguments and their debates. And I don't think it helps the product.
Part of me wonders if the only legitimate reporting that we're going to get anymore is going to be in these tell-all books that come out 5 years later.
Yeah.
Where, you know, there's
with their favorite beat reporter, the access.
But you read like that the Wendy and McMenamin book about the Cavs title, and like there's some messy stuff in there and honest stuff that you didn't hear about at the time. And maybe once you get past that like immediate reaction statute of limitations, that you can actually break this stuff. I just don't know what the upside to this access-based journalism is. Because, again, for Woj, it made a lot of sense. For the, you know, and again, it sucks. I feel like I'm just picking on Ramona Shelburne. Like, sure, we'll say Jackie McMullen.
It's today's example. Writer. It's the example that made you want to discuss this today.
Yeah, right? It just feels like... I just feel like agents are completely running the process. But then I will say, the teams are no better. I'm sure we've all heard about people getting unhappy emails from team PR for the Cavs, for other teams, for deigning to criticize the team. And we all know that almost every team has a few reporters that they're particularly friendly with, and it's just state-run media at that point.
Even some of my favorite national podcasts, I feel like we're not getting as much, and it doesn't really have the same teeth. And every single opinion is couched because you know that it's now at a size where they're going to get feedback, and team executives and players and all that listen to it. So you don't really get as many honest opinions.
This is where it hurts that we've lost so much independent media and so much prestige media. Because let's say we were Cleveland locals, it would not be particularly hard for us to get boxed out of team activities. We don't have, you know...
Hey, I'm lovable. What are you talking
you're
about?
You're lovable. But if we were to piss the team off, it wouldn't be that hard to keep us from getting a lot of information, which is why you need Cleveland.com's Plain Dealers, the Athletics, to actually be able to throw their weight around. So as all these prestige institutions are getting strip mined, there's just the risk reward for journalists to burn these bridges is just not there.
Here's the thing. I think you have great points here. I'm just surprised that this is the angle. No, maybe I'm not surprised that this is the angle you start with, but I'm surprised that you're bringing this up as kind of case or exhibit A of why you're not enjoying this season as much. Do you really think that that's what it is? Like, has that had an impact on your ability to enjoy the games?
I think the way the league is being covered is what affects my ability to enjoy the games or enjoy the season in the abstract. Like, yes, every time I turn on the games, I'm having a pretty good time. Like, as long as I don't turn on a Rockets game, which I just avoid.
Yeah.
To be honest, like for the most part, games are pretty fun, especially at the top of the league, but any the in-between time. So I wanted to talk about the access problem, and then the TMZ, this leagueification of it. It's just so disappointing. I mean,
I do think the transparency is a part of this. The contract structures, which were designed to protect owners from shooting themselves in the foot, have kind of put us in a situation where there's just so much turnover. Like the fact that 70% of the league has changed teams, I think there's something to fans not really having the same enjoyment of...
I had to explain.
It's new guys wearing these jerseys. It's different than football, because football, you're rooting for the team, and it doesn't really, they don't market personalities in the same way.
It's military.
Right. They don't market personalities in the same way. Whereas NBA, even if you're not fully in on a guy, you learn a lot about that player, and the NBA does a great job of marketing the personalities. But when you invest in a player and then they're gone in 2 years, and there's a immediate turnover, and we've completely gotten rid of the middle being acceptable in today's NBA, where you have 2-3 years of kind of the rookie scale contract, and then year one of a 5-year extension, we're talking about trading Karl Anthony Towns. Like, it's, I think that has an effect on the fans, and it's something that the league should take seriously, because as much as Twitter will go with kind of the quote-unquote enlightened take of, you know what, well, the players can do whatever they want, blah, 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 blah. And it's kind of an overcorrection from how problematic and shitty people treated the players for a long time. I don't think that it resonates with the casual fan and the majority of fans, and that's part of why we're seeing the ratings decline.
Yeah, I just think people feel really alienated from their teams and from their players. I mean, I think Dally is probably the third most famous Cavalier right now.
Probably a lot of truth to that.
Yeah. And I just think that ultimately this focus that I'm sympathetic, right? Because I used to work in sports media, and I know what kind of shit gets clicks.
Yeah.
And trades, I mean, you do too. You know that trade articles will always get more clicks than a deep basketball breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a matter of the way you frame your league. And when you can't even have a fun conversation about, you know, I mean, I remember when LeBron, and this wasn't even fair necessarily, but it was interesting at least, when LeBron was failing to win titles his first stint in Cleveland, there were discussions about stuff he needed to do better.
Yeah.
And get better at.
Yep.
And you know what? LeBron got better at those things.
Yeah.
And it was cool and it was fun to watch. And like, instead, we have Christmas Day, where the main discussion in Sixers-Bucks is whether the Bucks are going to be able to keep Giannis.
Ugh.
It's like, he's had one crack at being a good team.
Let me ask you this. In today's NBA, would the Grin Grind Grizzlies or even the Stockton Malone Jazz be allowed to exist? Within 3 years, would those teams... Would the criticism of Malone reach a point where, oh, it's not amounting to winning, he ends up teaming up with players in another city?
See, it's funny. I don't even think there's that much player criticism anymore. Players only get criticized on really shitty teams.
Okay, fine. But would...
Because, like, no one's criticizing Giannis.
Would there be a segment on The Jump saying, does Karl Malone need to leave in order to win a title? Or,
yeah, there would be.
Yeah, especially with the contract structures too. Like, that's another big thing. Like, I don't think Scotty and MJ would have lasted as long together if Scotty wasn't locked into a value contract for 8 years. Like,
I think these teams still exist. I just think the way we frame them, and part of this is our fault, on Twitter, is very different. I mean, the Blazers, I would argue, have been just about as successful as the Grit and Grind Grizzlies.
Yeah, to some extent, yeah, I can see that argument.
They have a similar ceiling. They have a similar window of success. They've both made a Western Conference Finals. They've both beaten some teams.
Memphis was actually competitive in those kind of later rounds. Like, the Blazers always flame out spectacularly,
but they never had to play the.
Yeah, it's not a point where I'd want to spend time actually debating.
Yeah. So my point is, those teams can exist, but the way we frame them is so negative. And part of that's on Twitter. Part of that's on the media. I don't know. And I think The Jump catches a lot of strays on Twitter right now. Mm-hmm.
But it's the most popular NBA show, so it's going to be the leading example, right?
Yeah. And I think part of the reason I get frustrated with The Jump is that no one else would dedicate the first 5 minutes of their show to the Washington Wizards being surprisingly fun. And The Jump did that a week ago.
Yeah.
And, like, there is this potential. And, like, I just think we just learned wrong lessons in the way we talk about the sport. Like, we went from rings culture being too overburdened to player empowerment being too powerful of like, what does these teams need to do to make their guys happier?
I
don't know. There's just something wrong. And I haven't, and this is where I lose my rhythm, because I don't know the solution.
No, and I think just talking about what we don't like openly and having that discourse as fans is important, because then you can actually kind of come towards a, and especially having these conversations off of Twitter, because I think Twitter just has a tendency to polarize people to whatever extremes. And I don't think anyone enjoys the extremes in player empowerment. Like, nobody enjoys baseball where the players have absolutely no control. Your team isn't going to make a lot of sentimental decisions. It's, hey, our numbers tell us this guy's no longer worth this, so we're shipping him off. Boom. And the players have no power at all. But I do think that there's something to the whole discussing players and their NBA careers as, well, you know, they have the right to work anywhere they want, just like any other employee. Well, that's true to an extent, but they're employees of the NBA first and foremost, and they have signed a contract. The actual comparison would be is if you agreed to work for a company, and after signing your term contract, a month or two later, you say, I want to be moved to a different department. I want to work at that department. Well, no, you have the right to work at any company you want, you to apply for any job you want, and your department may assist you in working towards that goal and facilitating that transfer. But if you don't like it, you don't get to sit out. You don't get to pout. If you want to work somewhere else, you can apply for a job at a different company. But when you're an employee of the NBA, you have to honor your contract a little bit more and not do things so publicly for the good of the game. And I think that's something, even though David Stern went too far at times with kind of the heavy-handed limiting what players do publicly and the image of the league and all that, I do think that there was some value in, as we said earlier, the noble lie to help fans stay invested. And I think players honoring their contract and actually trying to make things work in situations, that's something that people can get behind. And I think that it makes for happier fans. And I think ultimately it could help have happier players, because you hear Adam Silver talk about it. It's the players are not happy now. Like, it's, they're never satisfied. And it's an issue that they should take seriously.
Yeah, I think that, because you pivoted to a place I wanted to get to, which is both of our functional discontent with the last couple years of the Adam Silver era as commissioner. Mm-hmm. And I do think he's still hugely popular. I think maybe the problem with that we have with this is there's a lot of sugar rush decision-making being made.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what makes sense right now? Oh, we need to play up player movement, because we know player movement draws interest, right? But it's a pretty short-term view, because as we know, just like any sugar rush, you know, you eat too much candy, eventually you get a stomach ache. I feel like we're in the stomach ache phase,
yeah,
of the player movement and player, like, not player empowerment, because there's just a lot of movement. I mean, again, as you said, this is partially the owner's fault for pushing for these short contracts. And I just think we're in the stomach ache period, where we're making decisions based off of, you know, I think part of the reason I liked Adam Silver early on in his tenure is part of the reason I don't like him now, which is this, he's a little too good at listening.
And spends too much time listening to Twitter.
Yeah, he shouldn't be listening as much as he is. Like, sometimes you just need to know you're right and, like, put your dick on the table. And yeah, like, that's
the thing. You need to have an identity. You need to have an identity as a league, because otherwise you come across as needy and wishy.
Well, their identity right now is nothing. Their identity is
we will pivot to whatever, you know, what their helps identity you like is. Us more.
Their identity is this league. That is hashtag this league.
Yeah.
And again, I do think that on occasion, and again, I'm sympathetic to this, because I think if I were running the NBA, I would have similar predispositions. You know, you see something
working. I like being liked. Like,
you see something working, right? Like, you see Twitter blowing up the night DeAndre Jordan gets kidnapped by his teammates. and you see that Q rating going up, and you say, oh, we need to push this energy, this vibe. But the problem is, I don't know how sustainable it is. And I think that's why we're seeing ratings drop, is that eventually you want to know who the fuck's playing for your home team. I had to explain who was on the Cavs to my brother-in-law, who is a fairly educated sports fan. He's like, okay, Sexton's still on the team. We were watching the game, and he was taking stock of who existed on the court. And like, I just don't think that's ultimately long-term good. And for all the wins you have on Twitter and leading ESPN when you have a busy trade deadline, I just wonder if that doesn't actually lead to long-term growth.
I think those are good points. And especially with the team or the league identity thing, like there were even a couple of years back, and I don't want the NBA to go this route, but I think with the NFL, there was a period where, hey, the league's struggling. Everyone was putting off think pieces with what they would do, and they were interacting with the media. And then eventually it seemed like they just got sick of it. And they're like, you know what? We're going to be the bad guy. This is our product. Roger Goodell basically shut himself in a room. And
NFL seems stronger than ever, man.
And they've bounced back from that. They have an identity as a league. And I think the NBA can continue to have a more progressive identity than that. I think.
Yeah, we don't want the NBA to be the league of assholes.
No, you don't have to go that route. But I think just, you know, having a little bit of stability, like an idea like the in-season tournament, that does absolutely nothing to me. And I think tradition and familiarity is something that people enjoy when they watch sports. I want to.
And that's something the NBA is having a hard time with right now is comfort and familiarity. There's so much chaos.
Right. The team changes every damn year. I don't want the league changing. And I think that just riding this out and projecting a little bit of strength, which was something Stern was very good at. And I think it's also fair to note that Stern was definitely falling off and making a lot more mistakes towards the tail end.
Stern had a bad last couple of years of his tenure.
And you know what? The changing times in general, maybe no matter who's in that position, this is just an impossible position to be in, and you're going to make some of these mistakes. But I think just projecting a little bit more strength, a little bit more stability, and the identity, you know what? Let these waves just kind of happen. Like, part of what I was thinking heading into this when you were talking about why you're not enjoying this season as much, maybe we just kind of need a very good playoffs to show that things are different, because we spent so many years talking about hypotheticals and none of them mattered because the Warriors were just the Warriors. Maybe it takes some time for us to reinvest in these regular season storylines. What type of matchups are actually going to matter in the playoffs? Maybe there's an upset. Maybe a team like Denver actually does pull it off. Maybe the Milwaukee Bucks have Giannis stay, and that changes everything. Like, I think just riding things out and having a little bit of faith in the product being good and focusing on selling that product is going to go a lot further than an in-season tournament or play-in tournaments or random giveaways and bonuses for players, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think that is the route the league needs to go. Because I do think it's going to take us some time to adjust to the cap spike and everything that came along with it.
I think that ultimately, I think you're right. I think playing it slow, playing it patient, making small measured changes is really the way to go. We don't need to change the lottery odds. We don't need to do all this crazy shit. The league is close to fine. But I think that ultimately letting the game speak for itself is actually the best thing they can do. I think you're 100% right on that. I think it is fair to say that the game is actually aesthetically pretty good right now.
Yeah.
I think the talent level is pretty good right now. I think organizational competency is at an all-time high. I mean, look to see how few teams the Cavs are able to swindle out of Kevin Love.
Man, know what we need? Sorry to cut you off because you're on a roll. We need a villain. We need a villain team. Because I guess Houston could theoretically be that, but nobody wants to watch
that's
that
like,
to find out.
That's like the guy from Office Space villainy, though. It's like monotonous villainy. Lumberg. They just want you to get those TPS reports down. We need Draymond villainy.
Yeah, we need Kobe villainy. Like we need that team that everybody likes to root against. Even the Lakers. I mean, shit. How does this LeBron team have so little drama? Like,
yeah.
It's almost unheard of.
I don't need to hate a team, and I do. I just really like a lot of these teams. I like watching most of this basketball. I had a lot of fun with last year's playoffs. I just think it's the stuff that the structural problems we have with the league right now are CBA based and the general ethos of the league.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if the ethos changes and the CBA just makes a few tweaks, aka goes back to pushing for more long-term deals that re-empowers the middle class, where, I mean, half the reason the Cavs can't trade Kevin Love is because the entire league is either making the max or the minimum. I think if they can find a way to re-empower the middle class a little bit, all of a sudden this starts to feel a little less unpalatable. But in the short term, it feels kind of just bad. Like, and I want my interest in the league to match my interest in the product, because the product is pretty fucking good right now.
Yeah, and I think there's too many people that – too many of the prominent voices don't seem to enjoy basketball. Like, it's, hey, this is something we have to solve rather than enjoying the ride. Like, and I keep going back to this not being able to enjoy good teams that are in the middle and on the way up. Like, it used to be such a great story. And like that was how I always process sports, because you were building towards something. And I think just accelerating this process because we love the transaction so much has really done a disservice both to the league and the fans.
Sugar rush, man.
Like, if Darius Garland finishes this season strongly and they come back next year, and let's say him and KPJ have taken a summer leap, they're at where Memphis is right now, let's say. You have basically 2 years before the conversation changes on this team, and we should have a lot longer than that, because those players are basically under control for the first 7 years of their career. Let us enjoy the rise, even if it caps out as a Lowry and DeRozan Toronto team or a Portland. The fact that the conversation shifts so quickly, it absolutely drives me nuts, because the whole journey and the buildup is more enjoyable than the payoff. Like, so many of my most fond memories came in that first LeBron tenure. And I want the league to go back to that to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you, man. I just think that ultimately this is going to course correct, but it requires the league to understand there's a problem in how they're marketing their game. And I'm not sure they do yet. This is a pretty quiet voice, but you know who's not quiet are the general public, who just don't give a shit right now. Actually, they're too quiet because they don't care. I don't think anyone cares about the NBA. The NBA feels like a niche sport when I'm out and about. And maybe that's just me being too anecdotal, because I don't work in sports anymore. But when I'm just out and about, I very rarely hear NBA discussions anymore.
No, for sure. I can't really comment on that, because I'm in hockey county.
And I'm back in fucking Buckeye hell, but nevertheless.
No, I think there's validity to that. One thing I'll say is I do think the pure alarmists are going too far. And again, I think that is just part of their agenda as well, because it seems like everybody's got one. I don't think advertising dollars are going to go away, because even if the NBA is down, let's say 20%, if it's still the best option for advertisers, they are still going to pay that money. But I do think that there's room for growth, and I'd like this conversation to continue. So for all our listeners, I hope you guys enjoyed this. I hope it was coherent, because we're kind of, I mean, this is a complicated situation, and I think we've been kind of talking things out as we go here. If you want to continue it, one of the ways you can do that is with our Discord chat. For those that don't know, it's a little community we have with the Chase Down podcast where we talk Cavs and all that kind of stuff. And if you're not already a part of that, all you have to do is send a screenshot of a review, hopefully a 5-star review of this podcast, to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we'd send you a link to that. You can also just send feedback, questions, and basically any thoughts to chasedownpod@gmail.com. We really do appreciate all the feedback. Carter, before I wrap this thing up, do you have anything else to add?
Nah, just love you guys.
Nah, how about that? Look at this softie. Maybe that's the problem, is too many softies like you, Carter. We need to toughen the fans up. All right. Well, I want to thank all of our listeners so much. We really do appreciate you guys. If you want to support the podcast, as I mentioned, leaving a rating and review is the best way to do so. You can also subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe to help cook those books. Join our Discord chat or support us directly with the Chase Down premium feed, where basically 99 cents for the first month, $5 a month after that. It's like Patreon, except it's going directly to us. There's youth reports. We do emergency podcasts and off-topic stuff. So let us know if you enjoy that, if there's anything you'd like to see with that. No matter how you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. So thanks to Carter. Thanks to all our listeners. Until next time, go Cavs.